So today I have the great honor to speak with you about dreaming. And by dreaming and dreams, I'm referring to not our best wishes for the future, but rather the fantastic and sometimes dreadful experiences that we have each night when our bodies are resting. There's always a personal risk when we talk about our dreams, isn't there? We may feel afraid that someone will roll their eyes and say, "Oh no, here comes another boring dream." I feel that fear right now, actually. But I'm somewhat heartened to know that even if you literally fall asleep from boredom during this talk, we still move a step closer to my goal today, the reawakening of the dreaming mind. So go ahead and close your eyes if you choose. I won't be offended. Dreams are a mystery. They resist our attempts to understand them with the cognitive tools and frameworks that we use to explore everything else. They can be, at turn, baffling, boring, terrifying, ecstatic, deeply weird, deeply illuminating, and sometimes revolutionary. And yet dreams are slippery, sliding out of our reach almost immediately after we wake up in the mornings. Some have argued for this reason that dreams are best forgotten. I suggest the opposite, that as a culture, we have simply forgotten how to dream. But before we can talk about dreams, we have to look at sleep. We rest, we sleep on average 7 to 9 hours a night. That's 1/3 of the 24-hour spin on the Earth's axis. So for the typical lifespan of 75 years, we spend 25 of those years asleep. And yet we know so little about sleep, including basic biological mechanisms behind why we need it and what it does for us, even on a cellular level. There's no current global theory for sleep besides the obvious. We need to do it, and we feel bad if we don't get it. In extreme situations, we die if we are prevented from sleeping. So sleep is a mystery to science. So we can say then that dreaming is a mystery inside another mystery. And for this reason, most scientific institutions and even the social sciences don't care much for the topic of dreams. As an object of study, dreams are too messy. They're baffling, too difficult to generate those material correlates which can be neatly counted and displayed on colorful graphs. That scientific mainstream essentially rejects the wisdom of dreams because they are subjective experiences. They can't be verified. Of course, what the culture of scientific materialism doesn't spend any time reflecting on is how dreams have actually delivered countless discoveries and aha moments throughout the last couple centuries, a few of which I'll talk about today. So this double mystery of sleep and dreams doesn't play well in religious circles either. Even though leaders in the early Christian church, as well as historic Islam and Judaic cultures, pointed towards dreams as a path to the divine, today dreams in most Western religious cultures are at best ignored and at worst suspected and vilified. The basic theological argument against dreams is that dreams may be initiated from above, capital A, but attempts to encourage dreams in any way is asking for trouble from down below. So, like science, religion rejects dreams because they are personal, direct, and unmediated experiences. So now we can begin to understand the pickle that we are in as Western dreamers. Dreams are in the privileged position to be rejected not only by the academy, but also by contemporary religious institutions. Why are dreams so threatening? Is it really because they are too messy and too confusing, or is something else at play? I contend that dreaming is ignored and downplayed as a source of wisdom because of its mystery and not in spite of it. And this mystery is precisely what makes dreams dangerous to the power structures of our society. Dreams do not play nice with hierarchical constraints. And despite what our culture tells us, you don't need a PhD to have a creative insight that can change the world. And you don't have to be a bishop to have a direct experience with the divine. Probably not a surprise to you. After all, the fourth principle of Unitarian Universalism delineates the importance of the individual quest for freedom and for wisdom, that cognitive freedom to honor experiences from many sources of wisdom. 19th century religion scholar William James comes to mind here. In his Varieties of Religious Experience, James writes, "By their fruits ye shall know them, not by their roots." In other words, if wisdom comes from dreams or other altered states of consciousness, let us honor the wisdom and not question its source. James calls this view pragmatism. But what is radical about James's quote of these fruits? Maybe the mango, I wonder, the mango, the juicy mango, is that he's in turn putting a spin on Matthew 7:16, which was sort of a cliff notes for determining who's a false prophet and who is the real deal. By their fruits, you will know them. Do you gather grapes from thorn bushes or figs from thistles? So the original metaphor here was that false prophets are those who true prophets are those who not only speak the truth, but also walk the walk. Now James is going a step further. Let's not avoid the thorn bushes either. They have wisdom too, perhaps sharp pointed. So the history of science and invention is full of accounts of direct wisdom coming from dreams. And speaking of sharp points, in 1844, Elias Howe was working on a prototype for a new kind of automatic sewing machine. However, he could not figure out how the machine could hold that threaded needle. With the hole at the bottom of the needle as was traditionally placed, this thread would not pass through the machine. One night, Howe had what you might call an anxiety dream. He dreamed he had been captured by violent warriors, their faces covered in war paint. They threatened him. "Finish the invention or else." The warriors circled around him and jabbed long and sharp spears in his face. He suddenly, and this is interesting, became curious. And he noticed that near the head of one of the spears, in his face, was an eye-shaped hole. He immediately awoke with the certainty that the holes for his needles needed to be near the head, not on the bottom. So his creative problem had been solved directly in the dream. Early 20th century mathematician Srinivasa Ramanujan reported that all of his discoveries happened in dreams. Ramanujan had no formal university training, but is widely recognized today as one of the greatest mathematicians of all time. In 1913, as a young man of 25 years old, he was invited to Cambridge. There he produced reams of algorithms, often presented without proofs. Sadly, he took ill and he died at the age of 32. But it has taken a century to appreciate the genius of Ramanujan's mathematics, which has been applied in multiple fields, including computer science and quantum mechanics. Most recently, his work has been used to calculate levels of entropy in black holes. He was a man ahead of his time. So here's the interesting part. Ramanujan says he owes all of the discoveries to the Hindu goddess Namagiri. He did not claim that these dreams inspired his thinking, but rather that Namagiri brought the discoveries directly. About one dream, he wrote that the formula arrived by, quote, "seeing a hand right across a screen made by flowing blood, tracing out elliptical integrals." Now, Ramanujan was raised in India, where it's common to listen to dreams and to seek their wisdom directly. Reportedly, when his mother was pregnant with him, she dreamed that the goddess Namagiri would speak through her son. And when he was invited to England to study mathematics, his entire family visited a temple dedicated to the goddess to incubate a question, to incubate a dream. And the question was, should they allow him to go, despite the religious injunction against foreign travel? A dream came in the affirmative, and he went on his way. So this concept of dream incubation, to ask for a specific dream, to answer a question or for a new perspective, it's a bit foreign to Western dreamers. After all, in our understanding, in our story, dreams happen to us. We have a dream. We don't ask for dreams, and we certainly don't listen to their advice. We're told in countless sources that dreams are random bits of cognitive fluff, and it's defragging the brain after a hard day's work of being quite reasonable. The history of dreaming quickly cuts through these reasonable defenses against the value of dreams. The new psychology of dreaming has shown statistically, clinically, repetitively, ad nauseum, that dreams have coherent structure. Cognitive psychologist Bill Domhoff argues for what's called the continuity hypothesis, that the content of our dreams largely matches the interests, worries, and preoccupations of our waking life. So we dream about what's important to us. It's time to start telling a new story. Paying attention to our dreams can be healing, emotionally healing as well. On my website, dreamstudies.org, a woman who was grieving the loss of her romantic partner shared the two following dreams. She writes, quote, "In both dreams, I could literally feel his skin like it was in real life. In the first dream, we just hugged. I said I was so happy to see him, and that was it. In the second one, I was lying on the side, on my side in bed, and I suddenly felt his arms around me. I turned over and he was laying there, smiling, and I said, I can actually feel your arms around me, and he just smiled so widely at me. He looked so happy, just the same as he did before he passed away. I woke up remembering it so clearly. It was quite a simple dream, a quick dream, but it meant so much to me." These kinds of dreams, which we call visitation dreams, they have this warm, healing energy about them, and no interpretation is really necessary. They're natural, self-evident. It's a real human moment. Because dreaming is as real as waking life to our minds and our hearts, experiences like this let us complete unfinished business that comes with loss. And these kinds of dreams, visitation dreams, are quite common. Often, a well-timed visitation dream alleviates anxiety and can reconnect dreamers to the essence of the departed. But perhaps one of the most important reasons to invite dreams back into your life that I'll share today is their role in warning of illness and sickness. The accounts of this phenomena have been documented for thousands of years. Aristotle wrote in the, quote, "In the beginnings of diseases and other distempers which are about to visit the body, they must be more evident in sleeping than in the waking state." These dreams are known as prodromal dreams, and the warnings come insistently and with increasing nightmarish levels of intensity when they're not paid attention to. So one of my readers of my blog, Judith, a woman in her late 40s, she wrote that she had a dream in which a woman stood in front of her and pointed at her chest, saying, "You need to see a doctor." The woman woke up and immediately made an appointment for a mammogram. The test came back with bad news. It was breast cancer. She underwent surgery, and she was successful in removing the tumor from her chest. I realize that the idea that some dreams can carry health warnings is provocative, and it could lead to worrying that every single one of our dreams is secretly spelling out our demise. That's not my intention, and I want to assure you that not all bad dreams come true. So to prevent worry, I'm compelled to continue to share some recent peer-reviewed dream research on the topic of breast cancer announcing dreams, as these are called. because they have easily identifiable patterns. And this is just one example of many of health warning dreams. So a radiologist in North Carolina, Larry Burke, MD, he found in his studies that the five most common characteristics of cancer warning dreams, breast cancer warning dreams, include a strong sense of conviction. The dreams were more vivid, more real or intense than ordinary dreams. They include an emotional sense of threat or dread or menace. The use of the specific words breast cancer or tumor are mentioned, and the sense of physical contact with the breast in the dream. Burke concludes that keeping a dream diary might be a useful adjunct to routine self-examination as part of a self-care program, particularly for women in a high-risk category. These uncanny details, they can't be explained by our current paradigm of science. And the usual skeptical argument of confirmation bias strains credulity. We definitely need more research on this topic, as so much with dreams. But in the meanwhile, let us not forget we have the opportunity to act now in our own daily lives. So I've detailed how attending to dreams and treating them as real human moments can benefit us in terms of our creativity, healing, and even bodily health. And yet for me, one of the strongest reasons for reawakening the dreaming mind is what happens when we expand the circle a little more and reflect that our dreams may not be just about me or ourselves. That's why it's important to write down dreams as accurately as possible, as soon as you have them. Speak them freely with your family and especially with children. Not only do dreams reveal family dynamics, but they expose socioeconomic issues and frameworks, those hidden frameworks of our culture. We also carry metaphors of our family's joys, traumas, and secrets in our own dreams. These images cry out for acknowledgement and for healing. Finally, dreams reflect our humanity, how we are embedded in nature, or what philosopher David Abram calls the more than human world. It takes a little bit of work and time to do eco-dreaming, which I loosely define as dreaming as if the earth is alive, crazy idea, and communicating through us. I'm convinced that dreams not only reflect potentials in the emotion, bodily, and even spiritual realms, but also provide warnings of probable dangers and opportunities for our communities, because we live and dream together. It's easy to bring your dreams back, and this is really the good news. Journal them. Keep that journal on your bedside table. Let it be the last thing you see when you turn out the light and the first thing that you see when you wake up the next morning. Take 5 minutes before jumping out of bed to reflect on what just happened. What just happened? Even if it's just a vague feeling or even the color blue. Reflect on that. Stay with it. Be curious about what scares you in your dreams, like Elias Howe did. Examine those spears that prod you. If you have repetitive dreams, follow your gut and use your critical thinking if it could be something health-related. And most importantly, ask questions for your dreams as you drift off to sleep tonight. Make room for the space to listen, because your dreams are ready for you to wake up. Thank you.